This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. The legal information presented on In Legal Terms is meant to provide general information about the topics discussed and is not necessarily the opinion of Mississippi Public Broadcasting. The information conveyed does not create any type of attorney-client relationship. Please consult an attorney provider before making any decisions about your specific legal questions.
Welcome to In Legal Terms from MPB Think Radio, the show all about you and your rights. I'm Liz Gill. I'm with Professor Richard Gershon of the University of Mississippi School of Law. Hey, Professor Gershon, did Oxford get any snow yesterday?
No, we did not, Liz. It was awfully cold, but as far as I know, we didn't get any snow. I know people in the Northeast are going to be getting it, though, so we're thinking about them. But, you know, it when we talk about this cold weather, housing is always important, you know, especially as we get into the cold months. And today I'm excited. We'll be talking about the importance of the laws that protect housing rights. We're thrilled to have John Jopling and Will Bedwell from the Mississippi Center for Justice with us. Could you both tell us a little bit about your backgrounds?
Sure. Good morning. I'm John Jopling, and I'm the housing law director at the Mississippi Center for Justice. I'm a 1983 graduate of the University of Mississippi School of Law. Before I joined the Center for Justice in 2005, I worked as a legal aid lawyer for over 10 years, representing low-income individuals in rural southeastern Mississippi. I've also had the opportunity to clerk for the Mississippi Supreme Court and teach at the University of Mississippi School of Law Housing Law Clinic. Glad to be here.
Great to have you.
And I'm Will Bedwell. I'm a staff attorney at the Mississippi Center for Justice's Biloxi office, and I work under John in the housing campaign. I'm originally from Hattiesburg and went to the University of Mississippi for undergrad and then law school. In undergrad, I studied public policy leadership and was really interested in environmental law and environmental justice. And I went to law school with the thought that that was the area of law I wanted to make an impact in. At the same time, I started working with the McLean Institute at the University for Public Service and Community Engagement and started working with the housing clinic at the School of Law. And I quickly recognized, or was already beginning to recognize, this growing gulf between those that had access to the law, access to legal representation, and those that didn't, who found themselves being ground up by systemic injustice and didn't really have any recourse. And what I finally had an epiphany that what intersected everything I was looking at or working on was housing and housing law. So I was very fortunate to realize that before graduating law school, and then joined the Center for Justice upon graduation. I've been working on housing since then, and have had a great mentor at the University of Mississippi School of Law, Professor Hensley, at the housing clinic, and then now have a great mentor in John, and they've really guided me in my practice, but also let me do my go out on my own, do my Perry Mason thing. So it's an honor to be back here talking and to share the show with John. I really appreciate it.
We're glad to have you. And, you know, yes, Desiree Hensley, Professor Desiree Hensley, has been a guest on our show in the past, and the housing clinic that you both have affiliation with has done great things in conjunction with organizations like the Mississippi Center for Justice. So can you please tell us, you know, before we get into the housing topic directly, can we talk a little bit about what is this Mississippi Center for Justice, this great resource we have in Mississippi? We've had lawyers from the Center for Justice on in the past. Tell me, what exactly is the center about?
Sure. The Mississippi Center for Justice is, simply stated, a nonprofit public interest law firm that was established in 2003 for the purpose of advancing racial and economic justice in this state. Under our CEO, Vangela Wade, the Center for Justice works to dismantle the systems and the policies that promote a culture of injustice in the state of Mississippi and keep Mississippi at the bottom of nearly every indicator of human well-being.
It's such a great organization. We've had Rob McDuff on recently, who dealt with the Curtis Flowers case. Rob's one of the best lawyers I've certainly ever known. So we really appreciate y'all being here.
This morning, we are talking about your housing rights with attorneys from the Mississippi Center for Justice.
And so, Will and John, housing is an essential human need. So what are some of the pressing issues related to housing in Mississippi that you've both been working on generally? We'll get into some specifics as we go farther into the show.
The big issue, I think, is that is on just about everyone's mind and that we'll cover is, of course, COVID evictions. You know, how many people are out of work facing eviction during the pandemic? We also want to talk about housing discrimination and rent-to-own fraud as two issues that Mississippians face commonly. But a running thread I want to go ahead and mention just at the top of the show that impacts all three of these areas is the recent changes to Mississippi eviction law. And in 2019, the Mississippi legislature changed our eviction statutes dealing with eviction, dealing with what happens to your possessions when you're evicted. And instead of the law giving a time period when someone could get out of their home, take their possessions with them, these eviction statutes became what we call drop-dead removal. They issue immediate eviction and immediate possession of someone's personal property by the landlord. When these came up in the legislature, we spoke out and said that it brings constitutional problems and it's very bad public policy at any time, but especially when we think now in a pandemic that people are put out immediately, often without a place to go, without the ability to appeal or even take their possessions with them. And we said at the time that eventually a case would challenge these and they would eventually be declared unconstitutional. Now, they haven't been declared unconstitutional yet, but we want to give a shout out to the University of Mississippi School of Law's Housing Clinic because they brought a challenge now. They brought one this summer in federal court in North Mississippi where a woman was removed immediately and couldn't take a single item out of her property. And she didn't realize, and the statute doesn't make clear to people when they go to court that, hey, if you lose, you've lost everything immediately. And I know they sent out a press release about that case yesterday, and the judge has issued an order in there, although he hasn't declared everything unconstitutional. He's very clear that it's leaning that way if the facts present themselves as they've been alleged. And he even prods the legislature a bit that they need to take a hard look at these statutes. It's something we just recently testified to Senator Barbara Blackman's housing committee about, that this is law that we can't have during a pandemic, we can't really have any time. So I think that I just wanted to mention that at the top because it's going to keep coming up in each of these issues.
That's astounding to me. I guess I have not personally been a party to any evictions, but I guess I've had the idea that the sheriff comes and watches you while you take your belongings. But you're saying with some of these statutes now, you can't take anything out of your home?
Right. In prior practice or in custom, tenants were allowed usually 3 to 5 days to move out. And even in rural parts of Mississippi, they'd often be given to the end of the month. And law required that there be a separate judgment as to the dispossession of the property. But now these statutes are very clear that the landlord can demand immediate removal and immediate possession, and that people all of a sudden leave the courthouse and realize that they have to go immediately. And the case Connor v. Alton, LLC, which the housing clinic brought, that's exactly what happened to the victim in that case, is she went back to try and get her stuff, and the constable would not let her in and was acting pursuant to the statute.
So, if this is ruled unconstitutional, and it sounds like it should be, what recourse, let's say I was already moved out under this statute prior to the determination it was unconstitutional, what would I have any recourse?
So it's possible that you would, and that's an interesting part of the housing clinic's case, is the constable and the judge are trying to say, well, there shouldn't be recourse against them personally based on sovereign immunity, that they were acting pursuant to the statute. So that's not immediately clear, I don't think, but it's certainly a possibility.
You can send us an email to legalterms@mpbonline.org with your questions. Our guests are John Lopling and Will Bedwell, housing attorneys from the Mississippi Center for Justice, and we are talking about housing. But we're also doing a bit of a recap today. Where did our housing discussion for 2020 start? I'm going to tell you that next. You're listening to In Legal Terms on MPB Think Radio.
I'm Walt Grayson. You can now listen to the wild, weird, and wonderful stories of Mississippi with Mile Marker.
Slowly, we started, you know, picking these turtles up and saving them.
I'll stop traffic, grab one out of the road.
And then our friends found out, and our vet would call us.
Join me as we hit the roads of Mississippi on Mile Marker.
We are now a full-fledged nonprofit turtle rescue.
You can listen by going to mpbonline.org/radio or by using your favorite podcasting app, Mile Marker, a Mississippi Roads podcast.
This is In Legal Terms. Now, not everyone has a chance to listen to the whole show live. If you've missed any of our program, you can listen to the whole show at inlegalterms.mpbonline.org. It's also available on the MPB Public Media app, as are all our local shows. I'm Liz Gill, and I'm here with Professor Richard Gershon from the University of Mississippi School of Law. Now, on April 21st of 2020, In Legal Terms discussed the beginning of housing in the pandemic with Will Bedwell and the Mississippi Center for Justice CEO, Vangela Wade. We'll have a link to that podcast on the information for this podcast. This morning, we're talking about housing at the end of 2020 with Will Bedwell and John Lopling from the Mississippi Center for Justice.
And it's great to have John Lopling and Will Bedwell with us. And I really, you know, John, one of the things that you've been working on and Will's been working on are these evictions taking place during COVID. So what actually is the Center for Justice doing regarding these people facing eviction?
Sure. Well, you know, around the middle of March, we noticed that there was a really sharp increase in the number of calls that we were beginning to get at the center generally around eviction issues. And this, of course, was natural because people were beginning to have their income interrupted by COVID-related furloughs, which turned into permanent cutbacks, et cetera. And we decided to open up a special hotline to provide information to people. And this occurred right at the beginning of April, just as a state moratorium went into effect, which lasted for 2 months and expired on June 1st. And as other relief began to come out down the pike, we could see that there was a great deal of confusion about what sorts of programs were available and what exactly the law was on any given day of the week. So we opened a hotline. I'll provide the number. It's 228-702-9983. That's 228-702-9983. And to date, we've serviced over 300 individuals and assisted them with requests for housing assistance and referrals to the appropriate agencies. We've coached them through how to negotiate with the landlord if you feel like you're going to be unable to pay your rent. And of course, we've discussed the applicability of any currently available moratorium. And if no moratorium is available, what to expect when you go to court.
Do you think there might be another moratorium given out, especially with winter coming and here? It's been cold in Mississippi these last couple of days. I know in places like France, they basically said no evictions during winter. That's kind of the law. Do you see any help like that from the legislature possibly?
Well, we've got a federal moratorium that went into effect on September 4th. Issued by the CDC. That was scheduled to expire and is scheduled to expire on December 31st this year. However, the bill that was arrived at by agreement yesterday and released at 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon before the United States Congress provides for a 1 month extension of that CDC federal moratorium. As to the possibility of further state relief, we would welcome it. But as I said earlier, the state moratorium was issued at the beginning of April and expired at the beginning of June. The original CARES Act moratorium, which was only a partial moratorium because it only covered a third of the rental property in the United States, was issued around March 25th and expired around July 25th. So we've already had a period without coverage from July 25th until September 4th. And now we're very concerned about the fact that even if this new bill is adopted as proposed, we're facing right in the middle of winter a cliff in which there'll be no moratorium protection. This is of grave concern to housing advocates throughout the nation. And in Mississippi, there are studies that indicate that presently there are 150,000 rental households that are unsure that they will be able to pay their next month's rent. And that by the 31st of December, the amount of due rent that has not been paid could reach up to $200 million.
And you mentioned the CARES Act. At least with the CARES Act, there was money available for landlords as well to kind of help them if they, because if they're renting out their property and somebody can't pay the rent, then that's going to mean maybe their source of income goes away as well. Do you see any type of assistance coming from potentially either the state or Congress in that respect?
Yes, they're both, actually. So the state of Mississippi has announced the release of around $38 million that will be programmed for some type of assistance that would go directly to landlords. And the CARES Act itself provided for both emergency solution grant money and CDBG money that was devoted to alleviate the impacts, the negative impacts of people who had lost their income due to COVID. What that means is that we currently have in place a number of rental assistance programs in the state. That is money that comes from the federal government, in the case of the CDBG and the ESG, flows through Mississippi Home Corps, and is administered by a number of agencies with experience in the area of administering emergency rental assistance. And you can access those programs by going to the Mississippi Home Corps site, and you'll be click on the link for COVID-19, and you'll be directed to a page that will allow you to make an application if you are owe rent and are not able to pay your rent at this time.
Please give
That's
us
such
a call.
Great information.
Yes, it is. And we will have the Mississippi Home Corps website on the information for this show. We'll also have that COVID hotline number, 228 228- 702-998-3. And I'll give it again at the end of the show. So, you know, make sure your pencil is ready then. Our email where you can send us questions is legalterms@mpbonline.org.
And, you know, this is really, Liz, I'm so happy that we have John and Will here, because this is really important information anytime, but especially during COVID-19. You know, if someone is facing an eviction, would they go to the Center for Justice for assistance? Would that be a place that they would turn for help?
Sure, absolutely. Call our hotline. One of the first things we're going to want to investigate is whether you have met the requirements of the Center for Disease Control declaration of eligibility for the moratorium. We'll provide you with a copy of that declaration. The requirements are relatively simple. You earn no more than $99,000 a year. You've used your best efforts to obtain assistance to pay for your rent. You're unable to pay for your rent, and you're doing your best to make partial payments to your landlord. And if you meet those requirements, you can execute this declaration, provide a copy to your landlord, and in the event that you were summoned to justice court, the court should not evict you as long as you have this declaration with you and as long as you provided a copy to your landlord. But we're going to also encourage people to make every effort to engage with the landlord and to make arrangements for a partial payment or a plan to catch up whenever possible, because we find even before the epidemic that this is the best way to avoid an eviction, is to not go into ostrich mode, but to remain engaged with your landlord, remain communicative, and be frank and upfront about your ability to pay and what you're going to do to try and bring your rent current as soon as possible.
That's great advice. We often say on this show, you know, first thing to do is just talk to the person. You know, if it's a neighbor you're having a dispute with, you know, talk to them. You know, people always want to go to the next level and litigate stuff first, but really, a lot of times that communication is so important. It can really bring things back to earth and actually be very helpful. So I'm really happy you said that.
Absolutely.
One of the things that y'all are doing also deals with, you know, we talk rent to own housing, and we may have to cover some of this in the next segment. I know we're probably going to take a break in a little bit, but rent to own housing caused a lot of issues. So can you tell us how those come up?
Sure. And we first began coming across this in the context of our fair housing work, where we found people had entered into a contract with a landlord that said they're renting to own this property. And then they found themselves often facing eviction and going to lose the property and any equity they had. We looked into the issue and found that Mississippi has no regulation of these contracts. And in fact, Mississippi, because we started looking how other states deal with it, we found we're a minority of states that does not have either a statute that specifically regulates rent-to-own real estate contracts or a statute regulating rent-to-own mobile home contracts. And we might have time, I can get into, it's even a little more complicated, these schemes with mobile homes. But we also don't have consumer fraud regulation, which would readily apply to those. And we found that a majority of states do have one of those, at least, on the books to deal with this. But when people enter into these contracts, they sign what looks like a lease, and often the landlord writes at the top, lease to purchase or rent to own. And then you go to the very last page of the lease, and the landlord seller has handwritten in the ultimate purchase price at X amount of interest. Now, what we've found in practice is these are really built to fail, and they lure people, low income or minority victims who can't get traditional funding to buy a home, and think this is, well, what often turns out to be too good to be true, but they get locked into paying a high price for housing in need of repair at a high interest rate, and it's really a false promise of eventual home ownership. And the buyer earns no equity once maybe they've made the repairs, but they've missed 1 month's rent. The landlord hauls them into justice court, portrays the agreement as a rental, and has them often immediately evicted. And they've lost everything they've put into that home. And anecdotally, we can't point you to anyone that has been successful in a rent-to-own contract. They don't, like a traditional mortgage would have a deed of trust, warranty deed entered into the land records so that someone could prove their ownership. People in rent-to-own contracts don't do that. So they can't prove often their ownership to a court, but they also can't prove it to get insurance or get repairs done to the property. And so it's a major roadblock to home ownership and wealth accumulation for communities of color and impoverished communities in Mississippi. And we, I think I mentioned earlier, had been invited by Senator Barbara Blackmun to talk to the Housing Committee about issues, and we talked about the amendments to the eviction laws I mentioned earlier, but we also talked about this issue and said, you know, we've looked at 50 states, we've identified states that have good law that we need on our books here to regulate this, because right now it's unregulated and the fraud is flourishing.
Email us your questions. Our address is legalterms@mpbonline.org. We're talking with Will Bedwell and, am I saying this right, John Jopling from the Mississippi Center for Justice about housing during this pandemic. If you'd like to learn more about housing law in Mississippi and the U.S., I'll tell you how you can next. You're listening to In Legal Terms on MPB Think Radio.
This is Larry Morrissey with the Mississippi Arts Commission. I'm one of the hosts of the Mississippi Arts Hour, the arts interview show on Think Radio. We talk with visual artists, musicians, writers, as well as people who help bring the arts to their communities. We hear about how each artist learned their craft and get some insight into their creative process. You can hear the Arts Hour every Sunday at 5 p.m. on Think Radio, or listen anytime by subscribing to the show through your favorite podcasting app.
You're listening to In Legal Terms on MPB Think Radio. Professor Richard Gershon is our expert host. I'm Liz Gill. We do hope that you'll subscribe to our podcast. Lots of different podcasting platforms, different software that you can use to get podcasts. I happen to use Podcast Addict because I have an Android phone. Apple phones already have one on there. You download the platform to your phone. I touch a plus that takes me to the page to search for podcasts. I typed in legal terms in the search area, and it brought up our show. And then I'm able to touch the photo of the show and subscribe. And that way I'm notified when any new episodes are loaded up. This morning, we are talking about housing during our continued pandemic with our guests, Will Bedwell and John Jopling from the Mississippi Center for Justice. Now, justice.gov has information on the Fair Housing Act. The Mississippi Center for Justice has information about housing, and it has 6 self-help videos concerning eviction. We've mentioned today the Mississippi Home Corp has information about housing and COVID. We've got a hotline phone number. All of these links will be on our information for this show. And now we do have two phone calls. Let's go to Shirley, who's calling in from Starkville. Shirley, thank you so much for calling in to In Legal Terms. What's your comment or question?
Good morning. Thank you for your show. I work with three nonprofits here, and I know that for some of the people whom we serve, that there have been problems with, payment of rent and or mortgage, even before COVID, the pandemic. And I'd just like to know, to whom I can refer them when they have these kinds of problems. And secondly, whether or not there is any assistance for folk who are currently trying to get a mortgage or a rent, say, in public housing. A number they can call for that kind of assistance.
Yeah, so this is an area where I would strongly suggest that you go to the Mississippi Home Corps website, as they do a substantial amount of work in the area of down payment assistance and first-time home buyer promotion. And there is also, as I mentioned earlier, a tab for COVID-19 that will take you to the application forms for rental assistance if the inability to pay is the result of COVID. But there are also general rental assistance programs. That would be emergency solutions grant money that also flows through Mississippi Home Corps and to some established providers throughout the state. And they can tell you which one of those providers serves your jurisdiction. I would also add that there are a number of small providers in Mississippi that have very limited jurisdictions. And so when you talk about the people that you're familiar with through your work, if you will call our COVID hotline, we'll provide general eviction prevention information with respect to some of those smaller providers that may only serve one or two counties in a particular part of the state. If you have the address of the person in need, we will give you the information about the availability of assistance.
Okay, Shirley, does that help?
Well, I want to know the number he said that could be called concerning. I got on the show late. You might have given it earlier.
That's
the
all right.
Sure. Sure.
Could be called.
It's
228.
Shirley, have your individual or call 228. 702-9983. That's 228-702-9983. And we have a hotline manager that works with myself and Will and all the attorneys with the housing law campaign here at the Mississippi Center for Justice. And we'll work together to get an answer for your individual.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. We actually had a grant for one of the centers that I'm on the board of it. And last spring, I believe it was, when there was some embezzlement of funds at the state level, I think the Department of Human Services, I believe it was. So we had a grant that was servicing some members of the community. But, of course, it was gone overnight. And so I'm wondering if anything has been done to recoup those millions of dollars, that were through the Department of Human Services, if you have any knowledge of that.
Shirley, I think that's a question that really has to be directed to the state auditor's office. That's apparently they're working on that issue. So, I would check with them.
Thank you, Shirley. We appreciate you calling in. Let's go to our next call. This is Mikey in Mobile. Mikey, thank you for calling into Legal Terms today. What's your comment or question?
I appreciate this because this, I think, regards Mississippi law. A real estate paper in Mobile, that which is where I'm calling from, regarding Diamond Head, Mississippi, by my attorney at the time, borrowed for a loan, had it notarized as instructed for loan collateral, but on inquiry at the courthouse here on some other property, was told later that it was not recorded. Is there any direction or help, and who? What kind of lawyer do I contact? He was disbarred, but I found out, this is why this show is so great, because I found out from you all later that an attorney can be reinstated after being disbarred, and I don't even know. I don't know where he is. I don't, you know, he's got all the knowledge in his court, shall we say.
Professor Gershon, okay. Can you help Mikey or John or Will?
I'm gonna leave it with the expert.
Yeah. So, hey, Mikey, it's a complicated situation you mentioned, and one thing I will mention in Mississippi, of course, and I guess you've already recognized this, the real issue of proving property ownership when a deed is not recorded. But I would, if you're asking what kind of lawyer you need to reach out to, there are those that deal in real property, which is what we call real estate. And now yours, of course, has a little bit of a special issue dealing with an attorney who has been disbarred, maybe, or maybe not reinstated. Now, the Mississippi Bar is an organization that you could contact that keeps us all accountable and could help you understand who better, refer you better to an attorney that deals with that. That's a very special and significant portion of the law that a lot of attorneys don't get into, frankly.
Well, I found that, frankly, having contacted several attorneys, again, this is not in Mississippi, but having contacted several attorneys a long time ago, and they all seem to be really, like, frankly, closing ranks on me. You know, they just, they were.
Yeah, and I forgot, Mikey, I forgot you mentioned being in Mobile there. So Alabama has its own Alabama bar. And so when it comes to malpractice, a lot of attorneys don't make that their area of expertise or specialty. And those that do, that's mainly what they do. So that is where you need to potentially look at is potentially a attorney that specializes not in committing malpractice, but helping people that were victims of malpractice.
All right, so Alabama
helps.
And Mississippi Bar, then. Am I understanding
yes.
correctly?
Yes, Mikey. I think that's where you need to go first.
Thank you so very much. Thank you.
Mikey, we're glad that you called in. We can take your questions on our email address, legalterms@mpbonline.org. We're going to tell you that eviction hotline phone number again next, so go run, get your pencil and paper ready. We are discussing housing during our COVID outbreak with Will Bedwell and John Jopling from the Mississippi Center for Justice. This is In Legal Terms on MPB Think Radio.
I'm Dr. Nancy Lottridge Anderson, president of New Perspectives, a fee-only financial advising firm and co-host of Money Talks. For over 10 years, Money Talks has been answering your personal financial questions and sharing knowledge about money management. Money Talks can be heard Tuesdays at 9 a.m. on MPB Think Radio. Podcasts can be found on our website, money.mpbonline.org, or on your smart device's podcasting platform.
Thank you for being part of In Legal Terms. If you've missed any of our program, you can listen to the whole show, inlegalterms.mpbonline.org. It's also available on the MPB Public Media app, as are all our local shows. I'm Liz Gill. I'm here with Professor Richard Gershon from the University of Mississippi School of Law. We hope you'll stay with us at 11 a.m. Central on Tuesdays. Following our live show, you can hear Southern Remedy, Relatively Speaking, with Dr. Susan Buttress on MPB Think Radio. Okay, now, if you've got your pencil, we hope that you will write down that COVID eviction hotline number is 9983. 228-702-9983. We are talking with Will Bedwell and John Jopling from the Mississippi Center for Justice.
And Liz, there's so much to talk about in housing, and you know, this is a show I wish we had 2 or even 3 hours to cover everything, because they do so much at the Center for Justice. But Will and John, we were talking about rent to own property, and one question I always have with that is, if it's a lease, then the landlord has a duty to repair. But if I'm the owner, then I have the duty to repair. So who has the duty to repair in those rent to own situations?
Well, it often depends, and it's. Funny, one weird thing, the way we see it, I mentioned often a landlord has, you know, a form lease, and they write in to own and put some provisions in it. So often in the middle of that lease, there normally is a part that says the landlord, it's his duty to make repairs, and the lessee needs to let him know what needs to be repaired. But then on the last page, the landlord often write in, takes property as is. And so there is a dispute in that contract. Sometimes the landlord doesn't even write in the as is and just tells the person, says, I'm not repairing it. It's your duty. And this person often is of people that can't afford traditional financing for homes, often cannot afford attorneys, you know, to dispute and try and have that provision enforced. So we find that the housing stock involved in these contracts, they're often picked up at tax or sheriff sales. They already have issues, and they deteriorate over time, and it just perpetuates this terrible housing stock.
It's a tough situation. I wish we had regulation in Mississippi to deal with that. One thing that we do have, though, is the Fair Housing Act, and I know the Center for Justice deals with education and enforcement of the Fair Housing Act. Tell us a little bit, what is the Fair Housing Act?
Yes. So the Federal Fair Housing Act is our federal government's civil rights laws as it applies to housing. And put simply, it bans discrimination in housing. So if you feel you're being treated differently in a provision of your housing, say demanding repairs of your landlord, or you're being denied buying a house because you belong to a certain race, or you have a disability, you're a woman or a man, it could be because of your religion, your national origin, or even having children in the home. If you're being treated differently for one of those reasons, which we call protected class, you've got recourse under the Fair Housing Act. And we run an education program, but also an enforcement. So I'll give out we have a fair housing hotline to help people. And that number is 1-877-352-2269. That's 1-877-352-2269. And we're funded by HUD to run that program. And we help people get their remedies under the Fair Housing Act, whether that's filing an administrative complaint or taking someone to court over violations of the Fair Housing Act.
Will, a little while ago, I think you were talking about the case that's being watched on the evictions. We get all kinds of listeners. Some are plain Janes and Johns, and others are attorneys. And someone emailed and asked for the spelling and the case number to pull off of PACER about the COVID case. Do you have that available or that I can put on the website?
Sorry, I muted myself on the Zoom. Yeah, here, I've got it in front of me. So the number is 3:20CV57-MPM-RP, and that's in the Federal District Court for the Northern District of Mississippi. And I'll send you the site. We could probably put, if y'all wanted to put it with the show notes on the website.
Fantastic.
So we'd love for people to read that.
Be great. That's an important case, and we're fortunate that we have you working on it, both of you, and also the, I'm glad that, our clinics have definitely, I've served as a great resource, too, and I want to put a shout out to them. Now, let's talk a little bit, I know we don't have much time, but talk just quickly about the Fair Housing Act. If someone has a Fair Housing Act complaint, who would they go to? Do they need to go to a private lawyer? Could they come to the Center for Justice?
So we ask that they come to us, that they call us. We can help investigate and then determine whether they've got a meritorious claim, and we can file. What we commonly do, the first step, is filing an administrative action with HUD. That'll toll the statute of limitations, so it puts a pause. And HUD takes a first look at it, determines if they think there's reasonable cause that discrimination occurred. And they also do what's called conciliation, where they try and get the parties to settle. We've had a lot of success. We're starting our third year of the project, but we've conciliated over $100,000 for victims of housing discrimination. And then if HUD doesn't find what you want them to find, you still have the option to go to federal court after that.
Great. I mean, so what do both of you want to know in the minute or so we have left, I guess, Liz, about housing and their rights?
15 seconds.
As we go forward. 6 times. Oh, well. I'd say
you do have rights. Let them know that. And they should reach out to us to help them utilize them.
We are so grateful for you all to be on our show. And any more information that you two want to send me, Will Bedwell and John Jopling from the Mississippi Center for Justice, bring it, and we'll put it on the website for our show. This has been today's show on In Legal Terms. Thank you so much to our guests. Thank you to Java and Jay, who have helped us out here in Jackson, and for Professor Richard Gershon, who hosts from the University of Mississippi School of Law. I am Liz Gill. Please join us next Tuesday live at 10 a.m. Central for In Legal Terms on MPB Think Radio.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.